ॐ ज्ञानतमिनन्दस्य जनजनशलकया चक्षुस्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदमयं जगति सन्दन्तिकम् वंशकपुत्रभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैः च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः After King Malayadwaj left his party, the queen, they were in the forest, she was all alone, she was lamenting for so many reasons. It's such an amazing sight, actually, when the soul leaves the body. In a moment, the body turns into like a piece of wood or something. Of course, it's not wood, but there's no life in it any longer. It's dead matter. So immediately one recognizes that the person whom one had a relationship with, who was actually within the body, and was not the body, now that person has gone. Immediately one feels lamentation. The person is gone. What to speak of if the queen was serving him, Madhavi was serving him, her husband as spiritual master, and her husband, and she was alone in the forest. So such deep lamentation from so many sides was afflicting her. And suddenly there appeared a Brahmin, an old friend, who came to that place and began to speak sweet words. And those sweet words were very philosophical. Usually we don't think of philosophy as sweet words. We think of stories or pastimes as sweet. But here, these philosophical words are described as sweet. Why? Because they remove the suffering of lamentation. So what are those words? So we'll see if we can read them, and if Krishna allows, we'll complete the chapter. So the Brahmin came and began to pacify the queen. This is what he said, text 52. The Brahmin inquired as follows: "Who are you? Whose wife or daughter are you? Who is the man lying here? It appears you are lamenting for this dead body." Of course, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita tells Arjuna, Pragyavaram Chabasha say Gatasun Agatasun Cha Nanu Sochanti Pandita, that the wise person laments neither for the living nor the dead. So why are you lamenting for a dead body? There's nothing any longer that's there, that there's no life there. What is the use of lamenting for a dead body? And then he says, "Don't you recognize me? I'm your eternal friend. You may remember that many times in the past you have consulted me." I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. "One who is sincere and pure gets an opportunity to consult with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Paramatma feature, sitting within everyone's heart. So this old friend is actually described, I have the reference a little later, we'll come to it a little later, but he is Avijñāta, the super soul, who is every living entity's friend. Don't you remember me? The super soul is always saying. So if one is pure and sincere, one has the opportunity to consult with the super soul who is in everyone's heart, every single living entity's heart, regardless of the body. The Paramatma is always the Chaitya Guru, the spiritual master within. And he comes before one externally as the instructor and initiating spiritual master, who are the representatives, the Shiksha Guru and the Diksha Guru. They are representing. They are not God. They are not different from Him, from the Lord in the heart, because they represent Him. So externally He appears in this fashion. The Lord can reside within the heart, and He can also come out before a person and give him instructions. Thus the spiritual master is not different from the super soul sitting within the heart. An uncontaminated soul or living entity can get a chance to meet the Paramatma face to face. That means if one is pure, one can directly perceive the instructions from the Lord within the heart. Just as one gets a chance to consult with the Paramatma within his heart, one also gets a chance to see him actually situated before him. Then one can take instructions from the super soul directly. This is the duty of the pure devotee, to see the bona fide spiritual master and consult with the super soul within the heart. When the Brahmin asked the woman who the man lying on the floor was, she answered that he was her spiritual master and that she was perplexed about what to do in his absence because he had just left this world. So she felt bereft, completely alone. What to do in his absence? At such a time, Prabhupada continues, the super soul immediately appears, provided the devotee is purified in heart by following the directions of the spiritual master. A sincere devotee who follows the instructions of the spiritual master certainly gets direct instructions from his heart, from the super soul. Thus, a sincere devotee is always helped directly or indirectly by the spiritual master and the super soul. Interesting? Raise your hand if you would like to receive direct instructions from Krishna in the heart continuously. Now, wouldn't that make life easier? Yep. You wouldn't have to worry when you got a the Galleria, what to buy. All you'd have to do is ask Krishna. Okay, what should I... What's on sale? He tell you where all the good sales are.
Don't waste your time.
Unless you're buying something for Gopinath. But then the question is, who is willing to pay the price of purity? Purity means having no other desire other than to please Krishna. Anya vilasita sanyam jnana kamarana vita anukulena krishnana shilanam bhakti uttama. So one, if one's desire is to lovingly please Krishna, and that is really his motivating force, then Krishna will appear to him in one way or another, as the super soul, or as guru, as Vaishnavas, anyway, he's unlimited. So very, very wonderful. So the super soul has appeared to Vadarbhi. The Brahmana continued, "My dear friend," see how wonderful, because Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, "Suridam Sarvabhutanam," that he is the Surit, the near and dear friend of all living entities, right in the heart. So how kind Krishna is that he stays with us regardless of the body. If your friend was living with pigs, you probably wouldn't want to stay with him very closely anyway. You might send him a postcard from far away. But Krishna, even if we are a pig or a worm or a rat, he stays right in the heart, right next to us. "My dear friend, even though you cannot immediately recognize me, can't you remember that in the past you had a very intimate friend?" And everyone is longing for that. "Unfortunately, you gave up my company and accepted a position as enjoyer of this material world, attempted to be the enjoyer. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janiha karanam guna sangasya sarasa janmasu." And as a result, you have to pluck quietly. Either that, we have to pluck outside loudly. Huh? That was the gilap. Really? We won't instruct the gilap. So we pose ourselves as enjoyers in the material world, but we can never actually enjoy. What we meet with is frustration because the universe simply does not cooperate. And if it does for some time, we become more frustrated when it doesn't the next time. So we are only servants, only tiny, only insignificant. But in illusion, and this is what it takes for us to become enjoyers, we have to take shelter of maya or illusion, imagining something that is not. Prabhupada's purport we read from that. When the living entities desire to enjoy themselves, they develop a consciousness of duality and come to hate the service of the Lord. In this way, the living entities fall into the material world. In the Prema Vavarta, it is said, "Krishna bahi mukha hana bhogavan sakari nikatastamaya tare japatiya dare." The natural position of the living entity is to serve the Lord in a transcendental loving attitude. When the living entity wants to become Krishna himself or imitate Krishna, he falls down into the material world. Since Krishna is the Supreme Father, his affection for the living entity is eternal. It does not break because we make this foolish mistake. He keeps his affection for us because he is ultimately the Father of everyone. Aham Bijapita Maha. His affection for the living entity is eternal. When the living entity falls down into the material world, the Supreme Lord, through his svaṃsa, my own part, that means literally, his own svaṃsa expansion, Paramatma, keeps company with the living entity. In this way, the living entity may someday return home back to Godhead. So as the super soul, he instructs the living entities to surrender to him. But the living entity cannot do so unless he is free of material desires. That's what Prabhupada explains in the remainder of the purport. So we see, we become impelled every once in a while, I should give myself fully to Krishna. And we find that we were unable to do it. Why? Because we want to keep our material, not want even, but we have material desires and we're attached to them due to the motive passion. And that causes us so much trouble. And even though we may want to surrender to Krishna, we're unable to do so. So, the super soul, Abhijyakta, continues. My dear gentle friend, both you and I are exactly like two swans. Two white swans, actually. We live together in the same heart, which is just like the Manasa lake. Manasa means the mind. The soul and the super soul both live in the citta, or the mana, the consciousness, the mind of the living entity. Although we have been living together for many thousands of years, we are still far away from our original home. So, leaving Krishna, consciousness, the living entity adopts an enjoying spirit in his forgetfulness of Krishna. Yet, his friend, the super soul, always remains with him. My dear friend, you are now my very same friend. Since you left me, you have become more and more materialistic. And not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world, which was created by some woman. Who is that woman who creates the material world? Not just any old woman, but Maya Devi, empowered by Krishna, creates the material world. Because the living entity, even though every living entity is prakriti or female in relationship with Krishna, we adopt the pose of purush, of male. So purusha prakriti stohi. So the soul, thinking himself a male or an enjoyer or a controller, he's become situated within the material energy. Bhunkte prakriti janihani. He tries to enjoy that material energy. So that material energy is prakriti or female. So in trying to enjoy that, the result is that we become simply more materialistic. We never get enjoyment. Regardless of the situation we are in, young or old, male or female bodies, animal, bird, beast, tiger. What is the name of that beast who jumps so high? Or grasshopper. Yeah. If we want to really jump high. So there's so many different bodies, if that's, and it's all based upon our desires, what body we get. So my dear friend, you are now my very same friend. Since you left me, you have been more materialistic, and not seeing me, you have been traveling in different forms throughout this material world, which was created by some woman. So the living entity enters this world of Maya, and with an enjoying spirit, he's given a material body with which to enjoy from. And then, one after another, wandering from body to body to body to body, seeking some pleasure. So Prabhupada explains in his purport. Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. When after wandering, Brahmanda Brahmate means from wandering throughout the universe. Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, when the jiva, when the living entity becomes Bhagyavan, fortunate, then what happens? Guru Krishna, by the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna, Prasade, the mercy of Guru and Krishna, Pai, he gets the Bhakti Lata Bij. the seed of pure devotion, and thereby he can begin his journey back to Godhead. The living entity wanders into many species of life, but he is fortunate when he meets his friend, either in person or through his representative. Actually, it is Krishna who personally advises all living entities to return home back to Godhead. It is Krishna who does it. And sometimes Krishna sends his representative, so he does it in many ways, through books, through devotees, all are representing him, who, delivering Krishna's very message, canvasses all living entities to return back home, back to Godhead. Unfortunately, the living entity is so greatly attached to material enjoyment that he does not take the instructions of Krishna or his representative very seriously. I have so many things to do in the material world. I have plans, I have desires. My mind is speaking so loudly to me, and I am listening very carefully. So we don't take Krishna's deep advice and instruction seriously. This material tendency is mentioned in this verse as gramyamati, sense gratification. The word mahim means within this material world. All living entities within this material world are sensually inclined. Consequently, they become entangled in different types of bodies and suffer the pangs of material existence. So ultimately, even though we may come up with so many reasons why we don't want to go back to Godhead, we have so many things to do, here's the ultimate reason. It's basically our sensual inclination. And the result is atta eva maya tari samsarira duk. We get material miseries. Now, previously, the body has been described as a city. And now, in a few verses, Maitreya Muni is explaining this, and this pastime is being explained, and he will explain something about what that city is, or the body. In that city, the material body that we adopt, there are 5 gardens, 9 gates, 1 protector, 3 apartments, 6 families, 5 stores, 5 material elements, and 1 woman who is the lord of the house. My dear friend, the 5 gardens are the 5 objects of sense enjoyment, and the proprietor is the life air which passes through the 9 gates. The 3 apartments are the chief ingredients, fire, water, and earth. The 6 families are the aggregate total of the mind and 5 senses. The 5 stores are the 5 working sensory organs. They transact their business through the combined forces of the 5 elements, which are eternal. Behind all this activity is the soul. So we are not the body, we are not the senses, we are not the life air. We are not the mind. We are not the gates, the senses. We are the soul, which gives the power, the sense of identity to the entire configuration. However, because he is now hidden, behind this activity is the soul. The soul is a person and an enjoyer in reality. However, because he is now hidden in the city of the body, he is devoid of knowledge. He is lost. So the living entity is hidden, lost, within the city of the body. My dear friend, because he's talking to him. He's the super soul who's talking to the living entity, the soul. My dear friend, when you, the living entity, enter such a body, along with a woman of material desires, and that's what Maya's business is, to fill us with material desires. That is the business of illusion. to fill us with material desires so we'll want to stay in the material world with our plans. So when you enter such a body with the woman of material desires, you become overly absorbed in sense enjoyment. And because of this, you have forgotten your spiritual life, your actual life. Due to your material conceptions, you are placed in various miserable conditions. Actually, you are not the daughter of Vidarbha. You are not Vidarbhi. Nor is this man, Malayadwaj, your well-wishing husband. Nor are you actually the husband of Paranjani. You are simply captivated in this body of nine gates. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. It's actually quite incredible if we just look around the room, we see so many people, but we don't see who they really are at all. We don't see the life who they are. We don't see the soul, whom the life is the symptom of. Who the life is the symptom of. So we don't. We bump into each other all the time, but we don't even know each other. Actually, every living entity, Prabhupada explains, is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the living entities are overly engrossed in the material body. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears and gives instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita and Vedic literature. The Supreme Lord gives these instructions because He is the eternal friend of the living entities. His instructions are important because by them the living entity can obtain liberation from bodily engagement. As water passes down a river, many straw and grasses are carried from the shore. These straws and grasses come together in the river's current. But when the waves toss this way and that, they are separated and carried somewhere else. Similarly, the innumerable living entities within the material world are being carried by the waves of material nature. Sometimes the waves bring them together and they form friendships and relate to one another on a bodily basis of family, community, or nationality. And eventually, they are thrown out of association by the waves of material nature. This process has been going on since the creation of material nature. So very stark illusion. We accept that which is not real as real. We accept the temporary as reality, and therefore we are constantly in trouble because we long for an eternal situation. And therefore, Prabhupada concludes the purport. Prabhupada has such a unique way of saying things. He says, society, friendship, love, that which is valuable in this world, valued, and well-wishers are all simply results of being packed into different bodies. Like packed into a suitcase or something, or packed up in a... It's not very romantic, is it? And what should one do? One should know this well and try to get out of the bodily encagement. Encagement! What a thing to call this body, a cage! I love my body. And it's a cage? Try to get out of this bodily encagement into which one is thrown birth after birth, changing cages. One should take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, return home back to Godhead. Freedom out of the cage, not transferring from one cage to another. And that's what Prabhupada is strongly prescribing. following the instructions of Maitreya Muni and Narada Muni. Sometimes you think yourself a man. Sometimes a chaste woman, and sometimes a neutral eunuch. This is all because of the body, which is created by the illusory energy. Sometimes we also consider ourselves dogs and cats, and what else? Only if Alan was here, he'd give us some real good ones if I asked him. Octopus, yes. What's the plural of octopus? Octopuses. Octopi. Something. Pie. So, and everyone is simply identifying with the body. Sharks. Everyone identifying with their bodies. This is all because of the body, which is created by the illusory energy. This illusory energy is my potency, and therefore we can't break beyond it. And actually, both of us, you and I, God and the living entity, are pure spiritual identities. Now just try and understand this. I'm trying to explain our factual position. So he's explaining. First, this is basically the same knowledge that's in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, but presented quite dramatically. Because knowledge means the difference between the soul and the body, and the super soul and the living entity. Cetragya. The two kinds of cetragya, the knowers of the bodies and the body. Now just try and understand. So he's explained that you're not your body. I am not my body. You are not your body. No one is their body. No one is the body. But yet we are qualitatively the same as the Lord. Now he's going to explain the relationship between the person, the soul, and the super soul, the Lord. My dear friend, I, the super soul, and you, the individual soul, are not different in quality. For we are both spiritual. In fact, my dear friend, you are qualitatively not different from me in your constitutional position. So what are the qualities of you? We are spiritual, and God is spiritual. What are the qualities of spiritual? Yeah, sat, eternal, chit, full of knowledge, ananda, full of bliss. But Krishna is big and we are tiny, forever. Just try to consider this subject. Those who are actually advanced scholars, who are in knowledge, do not find any qualitative difference between you and me. So we are one in quality and different in quantity, in size from the Lord. Like what's an example?
Ocean.
An ocean and a drop. Another example. Yeah, another example.
Fire
and a spark. Another example.
Sunshine and the sun.
Sunshine and the sun. Yes. As a person, he's going to explain. As a person sees the reflection of his body in a mirror. Now listen to this. It's not easy to understand. As a person sees the reflection of his body in a mirror, to be one with himself and not different. When imagine yourself looking in a mirror. How many of you are there?
Oh, sorry.
How many? I'm not going to ask you. How many of you are there when you look in the mirror? Okay. Yeah, you only see one. So as a person sees the reflection of his body in a mirror to be one with himself and not different, Whereas others actually see two bodies. So if I'm looking at you looking in a mirror, I'll see two. So in our material condition in which the living being is affected and yet not affected, what does that mean? In our material condition in which the living entity is affected and not affected, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, what does it mean? He's affected and not affected. Are we affected? Are we not affected?
The spirit isn't affected by the material, but due to the covering of the illusion, then we think we're the body.
So are we affected or not affected?
The soul isn't affected.
The soul
is affected.
Are we affected or not affected? Are we?
As much as yet, one identifies with the condition, one is affected.
But how can the soul, which is spiritual, be affected by matter, which is completely different, a different energy?
He's identifying with that different energy.
But so if he's identifying with it, is he affected by it or not? In other words, if I'm thinking I'm the king, am I the king? No.
It's your perception of the influence by that.
Right, but here I am. What am I? So now it's confusing. Because we're both affected and not affected. Our actual position, it's like when we're dreaming. We're dreaming so many things, but there we are, not affected by the dream in a very real sense. We're just lying on the bed. But yet, we are affected because we're living in a dream world, but actually we're not affected, but we are affected, but we're not affected, but we are affected. So in our material condition in which the living being is affected and yet not affected, there is a difference between God and the living entity in quality. We become matter in one sense, and we're experiencing death and birth and getting older and disease as if we were the body, although we are not the body. So if we are not the body, we're not affected, but we are affected. So So the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, see the non-difference, only the non-difference between us and God. But there is both non-difference and difference. We are non-different from Krishna qualitatively, but fully different from Him quantitatively. So by the association, because we are tiny, even though we are spiritual, the living entity's association with matter, he's considering himself to be his body. And when he gives up that bodily consciousness, he can still remain an illusion and think of himself as the Supreme Soul. When he realizes, understands that he's a soul, that he's no different from him, this is how tricky Maya is, he can still remain an illusion and identify with himself as the Supreme Spirit. 64. In this way, both swans live together in the heart, simultaneously different and non-different from each other. When the one swan is instructed by the other, he is situated in his constitutional position. So by gaining instructions from the other swan, the super soul, qualitatively both are swans, but one swan is an illusion. He's identifying with the body. And the other swan is powerful, he's vibhu. And he doesn't identify with the body, rather he's instructing, and that's the Lord in the heart. So when one swan is instructed by the other, he is situated in his constitutional position. He becomes resituated. This means he regains his original Krishna consciousness, which was lost because of his material attraction. Purport. Here it is clearly stated, Hamso Hamsena Pratibodhitaha. The individual soul and the super soul are both compared to swans, hamsa, because they are white or uncontaminated. One swan, however, is superior and is the instructor of the other. When the inferior swan, so it's not that the swans become one in all respects. When the inferior swan is separated from the other swan, he is attracted to material enjoyment. This is the cause of his fall down. When he hears the instructions of the other swan, he understands his real position and is again revived to his original consciousness. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna comes down, avatar, to deliver his devotee and kill the demons. He also gives his sublime instructions in the form of Bhagavad Gita. The individual soul has to understand his own position by the grace of the Lord and the spiritual master, because the text of Bhagavad Gita cannot be understood simply by academic qualifications. One has to learn Bhagavad Gita from a realized soul. Tadbidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadachanti te jnanam gyaninas tatvadarshana. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Thus, one has to select a bona fide spiritual master and become enlightened to his original consciousness. In this way, the individual soul can understand that he is always subordinate to the super soul. As soon as he declines to remain subordinate and tries to become an enjoyer, he begins his material conditioning. How do you feel when you hear that you are subordinate forever? You feel good. Depending upon the size of one's false ego, one either feels good or terrible. No one goes to the university to learn how to become a servant, a subordinate. And even when one learns, but everyone ends up being a subordinate, unavoidable. So that is, when he abandons the spirit of being an individual owner or enjoyer, he becomes situated in his liberated state. The word svasta means situated in one's original position. When one gives up his unwanted attitude of superiority, he becomes situated in his original position. The word tadvibhacharena is also significant, for it indicates that when one is separated from God due to disobedience, his real sense is lost. Again, by the grace of Krishna and Guru, he can be properly situated in his liberated position. These verses are spoken by Narada Muni, and his purpose in speaking them is to revive our consciousness. So, Maitreya Muni is repeating this conversation between Narada Muni and King Prachini Barishat to Vidura. And now, this part of it is ended in the last verse of the 28th chapter, is this one, 65. My dear King Prachini Barhi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, is celebrated to be known indirectly. Parokshena Padarshitam. Thus I have described the story of King Paranjana to you. Actually, it is an instruction for self-realization. Here's Prabhupada's purport. There are many similar stories in the Puranas for self-realization, allegorical stories. It is stated in the Vedas, Paroksha Priya Iva Hi Deva. Paroksha means indirect explanations. There are many stories in the Puranas that are intended to interest ordinary men and transcendental subjects, but actually these refer to real facts. They are not to be considered stories without a transcendental purpose. Some of them refer to real historical facts. One should be interested, however, in the real purport of the story. Indirect instruction is quickly understandable for a common man. Factually, the path of bhakti yoga is the path of hearing directly about the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. But those who are not interested in hearing directly about the activities of the Lord, who cannot understand them, can very effectively hear such stories and fables as this one narrated by Narada Muni. So that's the end of the 28th chapter. And tomorrow, if Krishna allows, we'll begin the 29th chapter. And if Krishna allows, we'll finish that next week. And then within 2 more weeks, if Krishna allows again, we'll finish the canto, 4th canto. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
The word indirect is used here. It almost seems like the story is kind of like something external or symbolic or something.
It's an allegory.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it means.
So
it's an allegorical story.
Paroksha, is that what it means, allegorical?
It means indirect. It's indirectly talking philosophical truths. So there's... Yes. That's... talking truths allegorically by telling a story, because how many of you have read the but here in a story form the same things have been explained.
Does that make things like moral stories or parts of the Mahabharata, is that also a lecture in the sense that through histories and
in some ways
lessons are being taught.
Yeah. Lessons. So Prabhupada made the point in that purport that we should be more interested in lessons, in the lesson, rather than being just simply captivated by the story. But the real thing, he's saying, is to hear directly about Krishna's pastimes. Any other questions or comments?
I don't know how to put it into this question, but it's not this.
Just start.
We're supposed to be, at the end of this, when we go back to Sri Krishna's life, the way that's when we're liberated. And we're also told that we are eternally in knowledge. That's our constitutional position. When did we actually lose that knowledge from here? Because like, if we do realize that knowledge again, then we'll be Krishna again, it's like the full cycle of back. Krishna also said
that
we never return to this.
Yeah, so this question, get me a Bhagavad Gita, please. And 13th chapter, too. The answer to this question is exactly how we got to the material world and how we left the spiritual world. And why is it's easy to answer. Thanks. In a simple way, but whichever way you answer it in a simple way, there are problems with it. If you say we've been in the material world eternally, then who put us here eternally? And why? And if you say we've been in Krishna Loka with Krishna, then why? How could we leave? So whichever way we look at it, it's problematic. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that actually it is not possible for us who are conditioned, covered by Maya, to understand the answer to this question. Because it happened, either the word is anadi bahimukh, It's described Krishna Bule Se Jeev Anadi Bahimukh, that the living entity forgot Krishna. Since Anadi means since beginningless time or eternal time. Or you could say if it happened eternally that it never happened. There's no tracing back the time that it happened. So we who are in the realm of time cannot understand this question actually. We can approximate it, an answer, but we can never actually fully understand it, deeply understand it. So Prabhupada explains in here, in the 13th chapter, if I can quickly go to it. And when Prabhupada was asked this type of a question, his answer was generally that let's deal with the fact that we're in the material world and let's try to get out. So it's not exactly important how we got here. Find it quickly. Well, Prabhupada explains that that Krishna knows why we're here. A nice purport, actually. I can't find it in a moment. I'll give up for a moment. But is what I explained, maybe that's sufficient. There's a lot of devotees, it's a very important question to them. For me, I've always found it more, I've accepted that I'm here, and however I got here, I would prefer to get out. I can't find it. Any other questions?
Yeah. Is this analogy of looking in the mirror?
Yes.
I couldn't quite understand.
Yes.
Who's who?
Who's who? Mm-hmm. Who's right? Is there one or two? The living entity is one. That's right. With God. Yeah. That's right. But one in the sense of quality.
So that's how we see
God. Where there's not, we're not separate from God.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah, that's actually accurate. Because after all, there's not two figures. Yeah, I forgot to mention that.
So I mean that the reflection in the person are like how intimate our relationship is with Krishna in essence?
I don't think that's what it's talking about. It's just talking about is there is actually one or...
One is called
Krishna. Yeah. I think that's my understanding of what it was. Any other questions or comments or thoughts? Yes.
The same quality, not the same qualities. Is that similar to Lord Chaitanya's attempt to a Veda Tattva?
Yes. That's the same part. So you could take that analogy from one point of view. There's two of us. So then you get more Chintya Veda Veda. where simultaneously one and different from one with Krishna and different from him. Because we're individuals, we're different. We're parts and parcels. You've read that expression, we're part and parcel of Krishna. So not only like a drop of water is a part of the ocean, but it's not a parcel of the ocean, because its dropness isn't, its separateness from the ocean isn't fixed. It isn't eternal. If it's thrown back into the ocean, it loses its dropness. So it's part, but it's not a parcel. But we're eternally individuals. But yet we're one with him, and we're inseparable from him. We cannot be separate from Krishna. We can forget our relationship with him, but actually we cannot be separate from him. So that it was emphasizing the non-difference of the living entity in Krishna. So the impersonalist emphasized the non-difference. And for the purposes of service, the devotees will emphasize the difference. But yet we are non-different. Both are true.
Spiritual world of Krishna, we can expand and create. Do we also have that quality? Less of it, but the same quality.
We certainly have the tendency in the material world to be imitative Krishnas, if that's what you mean.
I don't hear it, but I'm saying in the spiritual world, can we create and
there's
expand?
There's nothing that we can.
That service.
Of course. There's no limitations of time and space on a pure soul. Any other questions or comments?
I just want to say one. Isn't it true that it's like, even though Sri Krishna can perform the functions of every other bhava, but that's not true with us, is it?
Here or there?
Even there.
Well, even here it's almost true. Yeah? Well, just like, did you ever, someone's cooking in the kitchen next door, and you smell it, and you can almost taste it just by smelling it. Right? And you can almost, the senses are almost interchangeable parts of it. When you see something, you can almost sometimes feel it, touch it, if it's presented in a particular way. Well, sometimes when you smell something, it reminds you of something else, and it brings back a whole, you know, get the whole experience again. And you can see it and feel it. So the senses are almost interchangeable in the spiritual world. Yes. Because the body is composed of spirit, spiritual energy. Any other questions?
Is the heart and mind interchangeable?
Yeah, basically. I mean, when you're mentioning the heart, it doesn't mean the physical heart. You could say because the soul is situated in the heart, you can say it's even the physical heart. But it's situated within the heart sometimes means the citta or the consciousness or the mind. Any other questions? We have another 10 seconds to 4, 3, 2. Okay, Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we'll begin the next chapter 29. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Venerable Bhakti ki jai.